everyone, welcome back to another episode of the I Am Avanti podcast. I am here with my two co-hosts,
Kara
and Sim.
Yeah, today we're going to be talking about the history of piercings. Just a disclaimer, we are in the shop, so there may be a little bit of background noise. We may have to stop mid-sentence to help our lovely customers as they come into the store. We're just recording in the on the side of the store, so we're not in the back this time, so
just bear with us.
Yes, apologize about the background noise. So yeah, today we're going to be talking about the history of piercings and where they come from, which was really hard to find and really hard to nail down because it seems like they kind of come from a lot of places. Pretty much everywhere. Every culture has their own specific type of piercing that was significant to them. So they come from different regions. And then as people migrated and traveled, so did the piercings. And so did the act of getting piercings and the reasons people get pierced. But as far as just your basic run-of-the-mill piercings, lobes, earlobes are possibly the oldest piercings, dating from 1500 BC in India, with nostril and septum following close second. Most piercings were used in indigenous cultures as ritual, religious, or for spiritual purposes. There's been mummies found with ear holes, including the oldest mummy found to date, Ötzi, the Iceman. He was found in a glacier in Italy, and it was recorded that the king and other historical figures also participated in piercings. But this one mummy, he had his ears dilated to like 7 to 11 millimeters, so he had them stretched.
He also had tattoos, so he was just the early body mod guy.
He's
demonstrating
like
it all.
The first recorded punk, I guess. OG.
Even Cleopatra, she had her ears pierced. I actually think, I brought that up earlier, but I forgot to say, I actually think she even had her belly pierced. Someone can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but
Naval piercings, they were a thing in Egypt. They were a way to claim status and royalty, and there was this one king who was like, I'm the only one who can have a navel piercing, and if you had your navel pierced and he found out, he would kill you. But yeah. So that's intense. Way to state your claim and own your look and make sure no one else has it.
Way to stay unique, I guess.
Yeah, that's one way to do it, just by threatening everyone. But back to the ear piercings. So sailors from many different eras would often pierce their ears, knowing that if they were to die at sea, the earring would recover from their body, would help pay for their funeral, which I think is pretty hardcore.
It also helped give them a proper burial too. Some people knew that they were a sailor.
A proper Christian burial, right. Funeral often, yeah. A lot of the times too, again, tying it all back to these religious purposes, mm-hmm. that have been threaded throughout all the history of body mods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Body mods were mentioned in the Bible a couple times, right?
Yeah, so earrings were mentioned specifically in Genesis 35. It says that Jacob buried the earrings worn by his loved ones in the biblical city of Ur. But their piercings are also mentioned earlier in Genesis, Genesis 24, when Abraham is sending a servant to go find a wife for his son Isaac. And they meet Rebecca and they offer her a gold nose ring in exchange for marriage. So again, marking status, but also bartering.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I like how the servant was like BC Tinder. It's like, instead of like, he's like, swipe right or send my butler out and find me a boo.
I have this gold nose ring. Give it to the hottest girl you see.
Right. Give the gold nose ring to the hottest hottie.
If she's into it, then we know she's cool.
Right. And then you pierce her nose. We get married.
Happily ever after.
For real.
Start a whole religion.
Right.
There you go. Yeah. I myself actually don't know much about religions at all, just because I didn't grow up being religious, so I never knew that, actually. I think that's very, very interesting, especially because I know that a lot of people with certain religions, they actually are against specific piercings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so as a Jewish person, like, I was always told you couldn't get piercings in body mods, like,
right.
Just various body mods, because you're not supposed to be changing your image in the likeness
right.
of God.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
But then it's like, well, it's all right here in this book, so I cited that to my mom, cited to my rabbi, who has a nose piercing. So I was like, if she can have a nose piercing,
Why can't you?
So also on the topic of nose piercings and religion, in around 1500 BCE, the Vedas, which are the collection of hymns and other ancient religious texts written in India, they refer to Lakshmi, the Hindu goddess of wealth, fortune, power, and luxury, her nose piercings. But modern practice in India is believed to have spread kind of throughout nomadic tribes of the Middle East in the 16th century.
Oh, cool. So nose rings have been around for quite some time.
Yeah.
That's tight.
I'm wondering if that would have been like one of the more OG styles of a facial piercing. Was it probably started off with the nose ring?
Mm-hmm. Seems
kind of
that
I'm starting
way.
To pick up now. Yeah.
Or at least in this region of the world.
Right. Yeah.
This time.
Apparently in India, Nepal, and Tibet, an amulet called the bulak was attached to the nostril piercing, and it was often so big that it had to be lifted up so that the person could eat. And people thought that nose piercings caused infections, but the bulak was just there just for purely decoration. So it's just this big, huge piece you put on your nose. I don't know if the nose is actually stretched with it or not. I didn't find any photos of it, but I think that's pretty cool.
That sounds like another one where, again, it's related to status. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you have to be wealthy enough to have someone who can lift that up for you every time you're eating.
Yeah.
A specific person. That's right. Their job. All they do.
Just my nose piercing lifter. That's your only job. Wash your hands first.
I take it.
Right?
I mean, I guess you probably have to be wealthy enough to be able to purchase the material, too.
Yeah. That's another great point.
Mm-hmm. And then, so I guess moving down the face, tongue rings actually... they began between the 14th and 16th centuries. Tongue rings originated as like a ritual amongst the Aztecs and the Mayans as a form of blood sacrifice.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, they would often pass a thread through the piercing to enhance the blood flow. So priests and shamans in these cultures would also pierce their own tongues to create an altered state of consciousness so that they could communicate with the gods.
Wow.
So I thought that that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's
a really cool form of culture.
Yeah, that is. We already talked about navel, so let's go a little bit further down south and talk about genital piercings. So in the 1970s, gay men, BDSM practitioners, and others got pierced down there to express their sexuality. I guess it really became super popular, and there are two people that kind of modernized and took off with genital piercings in that whole scene, Jim Ward and Fakir Mustafar. I am so sorry for saying that way. I don't know how to pronounce it correctly. But they were basically known as the pioneers of the BDSM and kink modification scene, and they explored with nipples and general piercings, flesh hook suspensions, and other mods.
It took place back in like the 1960s or the 70s, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but before that, I think there was a story about how the Prince Albert came to be, right?
Sam? Yeah, well, genital piercings in general for people with all different genitalia has been going on for a really long time. The Prince Albert, I think, is probably one of the most well-known genital piercings. It is a piercing that goes through the urethra of a penis. But it was named after Prince Albert, who was the husband of Queen Victoria of England. And legend goes, he basically just had a hard time controlling his arousal. And so Queen Victoria was like, I've had enough of this, dude. Like, we gotta deal with this. Somehow this piercing came to be, and with a ring jewelry through the head of the penis, that was then tied through, like a string was tied around that, which was tied to his thigh, just to help keep Prince Albert under control.
Down boy.
but ironically, now the Prince Albert's known to enhance sexual experiences and arousal. So we're really doing Prince Albert,
favor.
Yeah, we're carrying on his legacy, rightfully so.
Yeah. It's kind of funny how something that was specifically made to tailor, be painful and to, kind of keep you tamed, turn into something that actually potentially could cause you more pleasure. So that's a little bit the irony in that. It's just, it's great, you know?
But overall, a lot of genital piercings really have, again, a history in like spiritual places of ways of staying celibate, or almost similar to like a chastity bell, connecting you higher with God through either enhancing or denying of certain senses.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like a fun time.
I think so.
All right, y'all, that's all we wrote down for the history of piercings. If you have any more information about it, or if you wanted us to do another episode, we might do the history of jewelry materials later on to discuss how the material of what we use for piercings has changed over the era.
And styles.
And yeah. Styles as well, totally. But for now, we are going to sign off. And again, I'm Endy.
I'm Kara.
I'm Sim.
And thank you so much for listening to I Am Avanti.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.